English composer Philip Heseltine, also known as Peter Warlock in this connection, heard something he liked in early dances from France, and he chose six to play with, we might say dance with, in quotes. A pavane, for instance, is among the movements. And he drew from a 16th century dance manual titled L'Orchestrographie, a treatise in the form of a dialogue by Thoinot Arbaud, also a pseudonym. We learn from a translation of the manuscript that just happens to have a preface by composer Peter Warlock that Thoinot Arbaud was born in Dijon in 1519. He belongs to that honorable line of scholarly churchmen in the Roman tradition who combine spiritual with worldly wisdom to the advantage of both. His family was an old and distinguished one in the region, and the name by which he is best known is an anagram of Jean Taboureau, his baptismal and family names. L'Orchestrographie, first published in 1589, is the most detailed and authentic record of 15th and 16th century dances that's come down to us. It deals with what we should call today the ballroom dances of the period, considered by both Arbaud and his pupil Capriole to be an essential part of the education of every well-bred young man. But the reader will be frequently reminded, if only by the variety and agility of the steps described, that up to the last quarter of the 17th century, there was no clear-cut distinction between ballroom and theatrical dancing. But again, Arbaud was no ordinary dancing master compiling a manual for his fashionable patrons, and his interest in the art went far beyond the confines of its aspect as a passport to social success. Ancient legend and contemporary geography alike are gleaned in the exposition of his topic, and Arbaud has the true Frenchman's attachment to the soil, which colors his perception of the rustic disporting himself in country dances. Arbaud continually stresses the valuable function of dancing in the life of the community, ranging, so he says, from a spur to action in battle to a precautionary measure prior to the selection of a husband or wife. He makes short shrift of prudish reformers who would ban dancing on moral grounds, while permitting himself the role of censorious critic in the immemorial pattern when he compares current dances with those of his youth. And here are some of Arbaud's observations in the treatise as he's prompted by Capriole. The noun dance comes from the verb to dance, which has Latin roots. To dance is to jump, to hop, to skip, to sway, to stamp, to tiptoe, and to employ the feet, hands, and body in certain rhythmic movements. These consist of leaping, bending the body, straddling, limping, flexing the knees, rising upon the toes, twitching the feet, with variations of these and further postures. At one time, masks were worn to accentuate the gestures of the character represented. Overall, dancing, or saltation, is both a pleasant and a profitable art, which confers and preserves health proper to youth, agreeable to the old, and suitable to all, provided fitness of time and place are observed, and it is not abused. I mention time and place because it would bring contempt upon one who became overzealous, like the tavern haunters. As we've heard, much is made in the treatise of the way the feet, the hands, and body are moved to the rhythms of the dance, and how salutary, how healthy that is for the dancers, and ultimately society itself, according to Arbaud. We have a chance to delight in such dances, even though, like Peter Warlock, our ears are 20th and 21st century ears, In the upcoming concert at Moravian University in Bethlehem, presented by the Early Music Ensembles under the direction of Dr. Larry Lipkus, featuring dance music of the early Baroque eras and the Renaissance, and a chance for us to feel those dances in our own feet and all the rest of our body in a fun Renaissance dance workshop to follow. Dr. Lipkus established the early music program at Moravian. He is a composer and a member of the esteemed early music ensemble, the Baltimore Consort. And we had a chance to speak with him by phone about the program and the delights of the dance we'll experience on April 6th in Pater Hall.
At Moravian, we have three groups that specialize in early music, and they come together in the spring to put on a program together. One is the Collegium Musicum, which is the oldest. That's a traditional name for a group of people playing Renaissance music. And that consists mostly of alums who have played when they were students and just keep right on playing. So that consists of recorders and viols, viola da gamba, and lute. And now we have the addition of some colorful instruments like a gemshorn, which is a horn of a goat, and a krumhorn, which is a double reed instrument. So we have a lot of color in that ensemble. So that's one group. Then we have the Monteverdi Ensemble. We call it mostly Monteverdi Ensemble, known to the students as the Montes. So that's a madrigal group, one on a part, usually five, maybe six people. This year we have a quintet. And then there's the Baroque Ensemble, which varies from year to year depending on the makeup of the group. This year we have a recorder, violin, cello, and harpsichord. So those are very different sounds, but we try to find music that can feature each of the groups individually, and then we combine forces for several of the pieces.
Has the interest on the part of students been more or less the same in recent years?
I think so. I think it's about the same. People love to be in the Montes because it's a very high-end group. They sing very well. They're all friends, and we can do a lot of very challenging repertoire. And we also make a point of at least one piece will have a theatrical component, and that's true this year. But I would say overall, the students really enjoy being in these groups.
And when you think about putting together a program, you, of course, would have to take into account what players you have each year. So what about this year, and what were the considerations?
Well, this year I wanted to do a program that featured dance music. We hadn't done that for a while. And it's also going to feature, after the concert, we're going to clear out the benches in Pater Hall and have a Renaissance dance workshop, which I used to do a lot and haven't done really since before the pandemic, maybe 6 or 7 years ago. And that's where I and some student helpers will teach the audience basic Renaissance dances that everyone would have known back then, such as a pavane and galliard, and then some others like branlas and maybe some country dances. We have a whole list. And these are very simple. It's not as intricate as Baroque dance, which is more like ballet. They're fun, they're lively dances, and they're very easy to learn. The pavane, or pavin, as the English said, was kind of like a dance you would use in entering a ballroom or entering a room to pay your respects to a duke or a king. It's a very slow, stately dance, and then it's followed by a galliard, which is a hopping dance. So we'll start with those two, and we're going to play examples of those in the concert. So the concert actually features dance music, and some of it is vocal music that is in dance rhythms or extols the virtues of dance. And we're looking at dance in four countries: Germany, England, France, and Italy.
So you're going to take us on a little bit of a circuit then?
It'll be a bit of a circuit. We're going to cross the channel after Germany, go to England, hop back to France, and then go down to Italy, so we can end with a very well-known piece, a madrigal by Claudio Monteverdi called Tirsi in Glory, which is a wonderful piece. We've done it about 3 or 4 times before, but not too recently. And it's just a wonderful evocation of the joys of dancing. It starts as a dialogue between Tirsi, a shepherd, and Clori, a shepherdess. And then they bring in the shepherd friends, and we have a quintet of shepherds singing basically five little mini madrigals about dancing. So the text of the first two are Let us dance for the flocks at the sound of the oaten pipe guiding their steps are leading a dance, and so will leap nimbly the lambs and the goats. Let us dance in the heavens with luminous veil to the sound of the spheres, now gravely, now lightly, with lights and with torches, the stars above dance. So it's all about people dancing with nature being right there. So the stars are dancing with us, so the lambs and the goats are dancing. So it's a really wonderful bit of poetry Monteverdi sets really exquisitely. And that's going to be the conclusion of the program. Because it's a pretty big piece, that's all we're doing from Italy. We start the program in Germany with a Paduana in Galliard, that's another title for a Pavan. This is by Johann Hermann Schein, who was an important Lutheran composer before Bach. So this is a very nice, it's a good entry piece, a good way to start. Then we're going to do a song by Hans Leo Hassler called All Lust und Freud. So this is just the Monte singing, and the words are set in the rhythm of a Galliard. Bum, 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 all Lust und Freud. So you can almost dance to it while you're listening to it. It's just about joy and pleasure. Then the Baroque Ensemble will take over and do a suite by Johann Pachelbel, and this features three more dances. The Allemande, which is a kind of stately German dance, a Sarabande, which is even more stately, and then a Gigue, which is a rapid tempo dance. Then we cross the channel and go to England. We have two Allemandes, that's the English version of Allemande, called The Honeysuckle and The Night Watch by a composer named Anthony Holborn, who was a contemporary and friend of William Shakespeare. And then another composer a little bit later, Thomas Simpson, we're going to do a piece called Masquerada, Malcontent, and Volta. And we're going to we'll combine all three of the groups in the final number from England by Henry Purcell. It's a song in a dance rhythm from his opera King Arthur called Fairest Isle, a very lovely, infectious piece, which is just extolling the virtues of the British Isles. So those are the first two sets. And then we move to France, and we have two basse dances. Now, these are low dances. The feet don't go as high as they would in either a Pavan or a Galliard. They kind of stay low to the ground. And we're going to use our exotic instruments. We'll have one dance on crumhorns and another one on gemshorns. So we just get that pure Renaissance wind sound. Then we're going to jump into the Baroque period and do a volta, which is a very lively dance as a duet. And then our cellist is going to play a really lovely little piece by Marin Marais, also later in sort of mid-Baroque, called La Basque. And then we have our theatrical number called Chambrière, Chambrière by Jean Poisson. So this tells a little story about a lady of the house, a grande dame, who calls her chambermaid over and instructs the chambermaid to go to her lover and tell the lover that her husband is not at home. So it's a little bit naughty. It sort of sets the scene for a little ménage à trois here. And so the chambermaid goes to the lover's house, who's a lord, and he takes one look at the chambermaid and says, I'd rather be with her than with her mistress. So that's how the plot plays out, and there's a little dance that follows, and it's all very lively and fun. The French did not invent the ménage à trois, but I think they raised it to high artistic levels. And then we take a little breather, and then we go right into Tircian Glory. And following that, we have our Renaissance workshop. So it'll be a really fun evening with, you know, a variety of dances, and then the audience can participate and learn the dances that we've just been performing.
And it sounds like a very good program for spring, with the high spirits.
And also the text of Tircian Glory is very nature-related. It's about the flowers, the graceful dewy, when fluttered by breezes, quiver and rotate and make most delightful semblance of dance. So everything is about nature joining in the dance, and what better way to celebrate that with a concert at the beginning of spring.
And why is Peter Hall such a good place for these early music performances that you put on?
It's a very resonant hall, so we don't have to force the sound. It just envelops us, so the sound carries very nicely. It's also a beautiful hall, and you can see the stained glass window, and the sun will shine through, or maybe we'll just get part of the sunset since we're starting at 7 o'clock. But it's just a lovely hall with a really good acoustic, and the students just love to perform in there.
And Larry, tell us what you are doing and what's the status of the Baltimore Consort these days.
Oh, well, the Baltimore Consort is still playing. We have some concerts. We did some last month, a trio of concerts in Maryland, and we're going to do a little bit of playing in the summer, and then we have some jobs coming up next fall and spring. So we're still active. I don't think we're about to make another recording, but we still play the music from our recordings, and yeah, I'm still very much involved with them, and it's a great joy that performing and teaching and composing are sort of the three points of my life, I guess, in terms of my artistic or creative output. So I really enjoy teaching, I enjoy composing, and I enjoy performing. And teaching includes, of course, performing with my students, and so I'm immersed in the world of Renaissance and Baroque music and also contemporary music as a composer.
They aren't in silos, are they, Larry?
No, they're not really in silos because I'm fascinated by the Commedia dell'arte, which was a theatrical sort of semi-improvised street theater that began in Italy, in Bergamo, and then spread throughout Europe, even into the British Isles. So we know some of the names of these characters, Pierrot, Columbine, Harlequin, Scaramouche. A lot of composers have written pieces that feature these whimsical characters. And I have also been infected by the Commedia bug, and I've written concertos based on these characters, which try to bring out their personalities. So since they started in the Renaissance, that is a big connection between my composing, well, the composing world and the early music world, sort of combined with my works for Commedia dell'arte.
Review the date and time, though, for us.
Yes, it is April 6th, which is Sunday at 7 o'clock in Pater Hall. And the program is called Bayamo, Let's Dance. So every piece, as I said, will feature some element of dancing, and then following it is a Renaissance dance workshop, which is a lot of fun. You don't need to prepare for it. You don't need to do anything. No special shoes required. Just hang around and enjoy the dancing.
Bayamo! That's an invitation for us to take part in the upcoming early music program at Moravian. We heard from Dr. Larry Lipkus, who is Starner Professor of Music and Composer in Residence at Moravian University, and he outlined for us what we'll be experiencing in this program of early dance music, which includes that workshop at the end. And we'll be able to take part on Sunday, April 6th at 7 in the evening at Pater Hall on the campus of Moravian University in Bethlehem. For more information on the web, moravian.edu, moravian.edu, and we should certainly take the advice of dancing master Toineau Arbault, whom we heard writing in the 16th century, that this variety of dancing is good for our health and good for our character. And it is April 6th at 7, Pater Hall at Moravian University, the early music ensembles of Moravian. Moravian.edu, moravian.edu.